This episode is about minutes 46 through 50 of Solo, A Star Wars Story, featuring James Hewlett from Live Action Star Wars. Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today is all about minutes 46 through 50 of Solo, A Star Wars Story. In this excerpt of the film, we start with Han and Kira continuing to catch up, and then Beckett joins, and then Dryden joins, and then next thing you know, they're in Dryden's private chambers, and they're talking about the possibility of unrefined coaxium. Thanks so much for coming on the show, James.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited. When I got my minutes through for what I was going to be covering, I was like, ooh, I wonder. And because I've been listening to the show and I knew sort of roughly where you were up to, so I didn't know how far ahead you were.
Yeah.
But it's good. I feel like I've got some good minutes.
Yeah. What sticks out to you about these minutes?
I've got a bit of everything. I like the fact that I've got some score. There's some diegetic music in there. And then we get just, I feel like it's just a hint of a couple of the themes from the film, but nothing massive. I feel like we've got the heart. I don't know any of the track names. I apologize for not knowing the track names. We've got the Han and Kira sort of love theme, it feels like, at the start of it. But then as we go through, we've got just a little bit of everything else.
Totally. And I'm glad that you brought up the fact that we also have diegetic music in this one because, of course, right before this, Chicken in the Pot was the star of the diegetic.
Of course, the star of the film.
Exactly. And this is sort of a less talked about and less out in the open diegetic track. And it is on the deluxe soundtrack and we will get into it. We will hear it. But yeah, we do get this other piece of diegetic music that arguably is sort of more realistic as lounge music and sort of background music.
Definitely. I think I really thought it was interesting as well, the way it's mixed in through, because as we start these minutes, there's nothing. That we've got the score and we've got the dialogue between Han and Kira, but the rest of the background noise has been dropped out completely. We don't hear any of the band playing. We don't hear any of the chitter chatter that we hear later on. And then as we get back into sort of more party mode with them, we get that coming back in, which is, yeah, it's cool.
That's a good point. And that's something that I wrote down in my notes too, where like, as we'll start listening in a minute, it really starts with the focus being like, we are zooming in to Han and Kira land where, you know, like when you're having an intimate conversation with someone and it seems like the rest of the, you know, room noise doesn't even matter. Like you're not even aware of it. You're just dialed in with that one, you know, person, that one conversation. And also the film, like it's a close-up shot too. So we really are brought right into that conversation. And then when the shot widens and we start to take in more of the room, we also start to hear more of the room music. It's almost as if like that's where we, the fly on the wall, are standing. Like we're standing right next to Han and Kira, and then we're standing, you know, by the door or something.
Yeah.
And that's when the music starts fading in.
It felt very relatable. I felt like most people have been in a situation where you're in a loud, busy place, but you're having a one-to-one conversation with someone, and you do lose everything else around you. It does feel like you're just focused on this one person, this one conversation. So to get that zoomed in way of having it is really interesting. It's something that I definitely wouldn't have noticed if I was just watching the movie straight through. But focusing in, and like I listened to the minutes more than I watched these minutes.
Isn't it different?
Went through them. It's so different, and you pick up on so many more things.
Yeah, even me, like I just, even just like closing my eyes and listening, or just you know, not even looking at the screen, just listening to audio only. Oh my gosh, what I find is really illuminating is that sometimes we don't notice either extra things or maybe even missing things in the soundtrack when we are watching it, because our eyes can maybe fill in some extra details. But
yeah, it's weird. It's when that listening, sort of sense thing, isn't it?
Yeah. When listening, I like to listen for whether I can tell when the perspective or the camera angle or something shifts just based on how it sounds. And yeah, I feel like listening to the minutes, it feels like it's from a film still, because you can hear how the music is shifting, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of a lot of the Star Wars audiobooks, and they do a good job of having a level of sound mix, and you've got some soundtrack and sound effects and things throughout, but it's different from listening to a movie, where there is such an emphasis on the mix. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that I ever think about when I'm watching a film, which, you know, that's the sound mix doing their job right, if you're not thinking about it. But when you do focus in on that one detail, it's, you're picking up on it, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start listening.
Yeah.
Not for me. The only reason I'm here, I was doing this job, get a little money, and then I was going to come back to Corelli and find you.
Well, you don't have to. I'm right in front of you.
That day, sometimes, a lot of times, I think...
If you'd have stayed, they would have killed you.
What do you think of
this? I'm glad you got out.
Of the track?
Well, of, like, everything. There's... Okay, the one line that I feel like is a total... Like, I think it's a well... I think it's a... I like the line, and also I like the line for its insincerity, for its... What's the line? The line is, Kira says, well, now you don't have to. I'm right in front of you, which is such a, like, it's kind of an, if it sounds like an evasive statement to me, but I think she's being evasive. Like, you know, he's
I
like,
think the whole, through yeah, the whole conversation.
Absolutely. the context is he's like, you know, Han is putting himself out there being like, all these years I've been like working toward coming back and finding you. And
yeah,
she's like, well, now you don't have to, cause I'm just literally right here in front of you in this conversation. Yeah. So
it's that sort of the line that people like to use of like, today is the most important day of your life, but for me, it's Tuesday. And it sort of has that feeling where Han, everything that we've seen him do up to this point in the movie has been either for Kira and them or to get back to Kira. So from the moment he leaves, he's like, I'll come back. I'll be back. And he's everything he's been working up to that point. And it's like, they've happened chance bumped into each other. And for her, it's almost like it's is this kid from my past?
Yeah.
It like, could be anyone.
Yes. Like Han clearly has his mind on her, like in both a temporal way and also like long-term way. And Kira is glad to see Han, but
of course
she is, if any, like Han to her is a today thing. She's not thinking long term. I think I
get that feeling from her from most of her scenes up to a certain point through the rest of the film. When we see her, it feels like it's part of the job, and it's only later on when that starts to sort of crack through, and it's how that plays out. It's, you know, that's for you to discuss in the later minutes. But the track itself, it sort of shifts between that sort of sweeping romance, and it feels like a very classical sort of romantic track, to there is that wistfulness of that sort of the but let's just sort of drift away.
Yeah. So the romantic aspect of it, like, I think what it's reminding me of is a composer named Puccini.
Okay, I know the name.
And it's very like over the top romantic, expressive romantic. And a recent guest did mention that like the Han and Kira, I mean, she was talking about specifically a different track, but still like the Han and Kira music is so like over the top sentimental. It feels like almost a little bit more, it feels very serious. Like the tone of it is like confusing to some. Like, cause it's so, like, I'm not sure if I think it's confusing here, but it does strike me as a very earnestly romantic theme. And I think the earnesty of it is a little bit jarring.
I think earnest is the perfect word for it. It's very much a first love.
Yeah.
This is a kid who's fallen in love that first time. And it's got that feeling where it's like, this is my life. This is it. I'm done. I'm sorted. Like, it's like, oh, kid.
Yeah.
You don't know.
It is totally a first love type of theme. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And even in like the way, even in the little dramatic, dramatic in that it is really following the drama, and it's like the way that the music will shift, like it's so sensitive to the drama. I think that's part of it too. Like, let's play a little bit of it again. And like what I'm thinking of is the part where the French horn comes in. It almost sounds like the Force theme, but it's not. It's when it goes like, and it's after Kira says, well, now you don't have to, I'm right in front of you. And then Han's like, that day, sometimes I think about, if you would have stayed, they would have killed you. I'm glad you got out. And then Han's like, how did you get out? And then the music shifts to like this minor thing. And while Kira says, I didn't.
It feels almost ominous. Like there is this sort of like almost sort of spookiness to this, like the, ooh, I didn't. And then you realize, oh, if she didn't get out, then she's still very much in that world, in that life.
Yeah, but the music like flexibly matches the drama.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's comedic, but it's like something about it, something about it is very musical in like musicals, as in musicals or operas, where you'll be like, happy, 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 I'm singing a happy song, and then I had a bad day. Let's go to this part. Like, well, that's a little bit of
It's sort of almost like that subtle shift does really set the tone.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying it's not a subtle shift.
No. It's not a subtle shift, but yeah.
It's subtle from a certain point of view, but then like not subtle from, well, let's just listen to it. Because it's quite interesting.
Reason I'm here. I was doing this job, get a little money, and then I was going to come back to Corellia and find you.
Well, you don't have to. I'm right in front of you.
That day, sometimes, a lot of times, I think.
If you'd have stayed, they would have killed you.
Now here.
I'm glad you got out.
How did you get out?
Gets all like minor.
I didn't.
Right there. And then suddenly another mood shift.
You look good. It's a little rough around the edges.
Yep. So right as she starts to like, she's not going to go down there. She's like, you know, you look good.
It's.
And then we start to get the diegetic.
Describing it as a musical, as an opera is because it's following the dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's not a piece of music that's been written for any conversation or this scene. It's 100% following the words that are being said. It's almost like they're lyrics to the track because of the ups and downs with it. Yeah, very much.
Yeah. It's scored very tightly to the dialogue. And I think definitely. And then I think it's interesting where she, like, it's well acted here when she's, you know, it's maybe a little bit of a cheesy line. I don't know. She's like, I didn't. And then the sudden mood shift, like, I think she does that really well. You look good. Like, just a little rough around the edges, but good.
Yeah.
And then what starts to play is listed on the deluxe soundtrack as Stormtrooper JP054 Karaoke is what that's called.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it's this, it's an upbeat. When we continue playing, well, I'll continue playing now. You'll hear here in the background.
What should we drink to?
Let's drink to and see where it goes.
It's very like Canto Bight almost, you know?
It has a very Canto Bight feel to it.
Yeah.
It's sort of jolly. It's, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And it's more up tempo than Chicken in the Pot. It has that like, a saxophone sound, and a little bit of like, there's no singing, so it really feels more like lounge. It feels more like background lounge music or background,
it's
whatever.
Sort of got a 1930s sort of like feel to it, almost like, yeah. That
it is more cantina. than Chicken in the Pot is, which is like an entirely, that's a whole other episode in itself, which we did last week. The vibe also is, it reminds me of Summertime, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
The melody of it. Well, Summertime goes. And this kind of goes similar. It goes. Anyway, it just reminds me of that every time I hear it.
Which, to be honest, I feel like works well with Chicken in the Pot, because Chicken in the Pot, despite being a very different track, you could almost hear that vocalist doing a cover of Summertime, I think. Like,
that's so true.
Like, I think there is it's, I don't know if this is meant to still be them playing this or not. We don't ever cut to.
We don't see the instrumentalists.
No, we don't see them at all. So whether it's the same lounge singers or different people or an actual Stormtrooper singing karaoke.
That's what I'm thinking. Because since we hear is a backing track, we don't hear any singers here. So no. It sounds like a karaoke track or something.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. I want to see Stormtroopers doing karaoke.
I know. Oh, yeah. we do in Return of the Jedi get the Stormtrooper helmets being the drums.
Yep.
And that would fit in this song, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And we know that there was some Imperials in the scene earlier on on the ship, so.
Let's listen to some of the from the track. So like, it's definitely, like, it feels more like a vamp than it does a melody. Like, you could sing something on top of it. We definitely hear, like, you know, like a Latin drum section.
Yeah. This is being played at a bad Tex-Mex cantina, sort of.
For sure. Yeah. And it's pretty repetitive, so, yeah, it can be soloed over. I mean, sky's the limit here. It does develop a little bit, but there are interesting elements that come in later that I feel are reminiscent of Chicken in the Pot, at least the instruments. Like, we'll hear it a little bit later in this, you know, like in 20 seconds or something. we'll hear some of the strings, and I'll point that out when we get there. But we might as well continue listening.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Here we go.
Did you ever get that ship?
Good music for downing a lot of drinks.
Yeah. Sort of. About to. That's why I'm here. I'm working on a very big deal.
Very big deal.
How big? Enormous.
Really? And when are you going to close the focus this in? Enormous deal.
Yeah. The dialogue is really mixed really high, which, I mean, is good for clarity's sake, so we can at least hear it.
Some adventure.
It is interesting where it's still there, though. Like, you can still hear it in the background. It's not as focused in as that first scene.
Yeah,
first part of the scene.
For sure.
There is still a little bit more, but still bringing it back to the focus being on them, not the rest of the party.
And also, like, just in terms of where they are standing in the scene, in the first part of the conversation, they're, like, in the very back of the room, or, like, they're on the outskirts. And then when they're drinking here, they physically have moved more toward the center of the room. So that could also explain why we hear more of the music. Yeah. But there is a name drop earlier.
With the waitress, right?
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep. Yeah, I couldn't pull the name, but yeah, it's...
There's a name drop, and it is...
We're good?
Okay.
You too.
Thank you, Italy. Have you been attentive to Dokondar?
Very.
Dokondar, who is a character in Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland.
Yes, Dokondar, yes.
Dokondar's Den of Antiquities. And that's probably the first time I have heard that name, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, I think this came out just before Galaxy's Edge opened, I believe?
Yeah.
Well, right around the same time, I think. A year before, okay. So it's pretty cool that they were seeding all sorts of things in there.
Yeah, and I didn't really notice until after going to Galaxy's Edge and then watching Solo. I mean, I just didn't remember the name Dokondar.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Was this track played? Is it
at Galaxy's Edge?
Dokondar's. Yeah,
Oh, it's not played at Dock on Dars, for sure.
Okay, I was going to say, because that place has its own soundtrack, doesn't it?
Galaxy's Edge or Dock on Dars?
I think both, don't
they? Oh, Galaxy's Edge is like so many different sounds happening. There are different soundtrack. There are different like sound loops happening in various places. So like the garage at Galaxy's Edge has its own like radio playing. And then, you know, the cantina has a DJ, so it has its own soundtrack sort of. And then in the like outside areas and various places, there's sort of different music, which is kind of typical for Disneyland to have, you know, different soundtracks. And by soundtracks, like I also mean like soundtracks that are not necessarily just music. Like
Disney do every sort of track. They'll do a smell track. If they can, that the humans can feel like they've got it covered.
Right. Yeah. Like outside in the Resistance encampment, the soundtrack is like cicadas and like sparse things. Mm. Yeah.
Well, the total immersion that they want to have for the place.
Yeah, totally. So this is when shout out to Chewie just downing the drinks in the background.
I was gonna say, when, I mean, they talk about having two, and Chewie's like, "Yeah, cool, I'll have two."
Yeah, I didn't get the like joke where Kira says, "What should we drink to?" And Han's like, "Let's drink to the number and see where it goes."
But then it cuts straight back to Chewie,
who's drinking just like, too. Yeah,
he's double fisting already, so he's just like, "Yep, cool, I'll have that one, and then that one." If someone else is paying, I'm drinking.
Yeah. Chewie's like, how did I end up here?
God. Yeah. These are not my people.
Yeah. And then, okay, let's continue. Or I'll skip ahead a little bit. So we'll get to the slurpy strings.
Really? And when are you going to close this enormous deal?
Any minute.
I thought about you a lot.
It's about to happen.
Somewhere. Some adventure. I imagined myself with you. It always made me.
What?
Hey.
It's interesting.
What did I say?
So I was curious about that. I wanted to ask you, is that part of the score or is that still the diegetic track?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, let's, we can find the answer by just playing the karaoke track and seeing if it shows up there. Which we will do in a second, but just from the perspective of someone watching, I do feel like the boundary is very blurred there. And I can't really tell.
I can't for the rest of the scene in this part, like in the sort of the foyer area, like it sounds like you can always sort of hear the band playing in the background a little bit, but then the score does come back in and it's a really interesting sort of mix of the two playing at the same time, but creeping over each other. And it's like, what's what?
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out which was which, but it's like the score is there to sort of guide the emotion and everything. But the soundtrack is still playing because we're widening up. We're getting Beckett. We're getting Chewie. We're getting Dryden, everyone being introduced.
Yeah. I think my initial guess is that it's part of the diegetic music, but just like happens to be this perfectly timed.
Yeah, it's convenient.
Interesting. So if you listen on the soundtrack, you will hear the Stormtrooper, I guess, doing karaoke. Well, I don't hear the slurpy string part here.
I don't.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's not here. I'm going to skip a little bit before in case we missed it. Oh, here it is. Yep. Yep, it is here. It's in the middle. It's right in the middle of the track. Interesting.
Is that a flute? Is that a...
That is so interesting. Huh, that's a very interesting interlude.
That doesn't feel like it fits that track at all.
I know. Well, it fits it in the same way that Chicken in the Pot vocals fit the track, which is, which that is just a very interesting case study. And this feels like it got some of the Chicken in the Pot flavoring for this song right there.
Sounds delicious.
It's like strings and some type of flute. I think what strikes me most about it is, well, first of all, just that suddenly strings enter, and before the strings are not part of the track at all. And the slurpy nature of it, like meaning like it kind of does, it's sort of similar gestures to like the shape of the Han and Kira theme where it's like very connected. It's very like, is lugubrious what I'm, a word that I'm trying to think of?
It's a great word and I mean, it works with slurpy. So yeah, I can see what you're saying. Yeah.
And where it goes like, it's like a sigh. It's like, yeah.
You sort of just sort of fall into it. Like there's a big beanbag or something that you just want to.
Yeah. In the midst of this, you know, pretty strict tempo, like strictly rhythmic track. It's like this suddenly very like expansive, freer sounding little part.
So I want to headcanon this. We don't see the music being played. We know that it's Stormtrooper karaoke. I think that this Stormtrooper just happened to have a flute with him. And I think this is him. Because we hear him doing a little bit of singing. So he's doing that. And then he's just like, well, now's my chance. And he just busts out his flute and has this one little bit.
Well, okay. That wouldn't explain the strings, but that could explain the flute because...
The flute, yeah.
Because this Stormtrooper is doing actually a good job for karaoke. Mm. Like it's...
Yeah, definitely.
It actually sounds like... It sounds like a very good version of karaoke. So like, I'm just going to say that this Stormtrooper is like one of those karaoke overachievers. He's like, okay, fine.
Oh, I don't want it tonight.
And then they whip out their flute. On. They like actually sing like it perfectly.
He's Ron Burgundy. He's Ron. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's funny. JP054, you little ham. So I like this. I like that, James.
I like it.
Yeah. So the slurpy strings kind of conveniently lend themselves to this other change in tone that happens with, they're interrupted by Beckett here. Beckett enters the scene and it's very brief. You know, Beckett's like, what, like WTF? What did I say? And they only get to... Tiff battle. They only get to talk, argue. I don't know, for a few seconds before a much worse entity shows up. A much more ominous presence shows up. So let's get into that.
What?
Hey, what did I say?
Look, I can't keep my eyes down the whole time. I'm gonna bump into something. I
don't bump know. Into
I
something.
Beckett. What are you?
Wait. You two work together.
Yeah.
Tobias.
Okay. Dryden. Now, Dryden's patience is tested. Right? It enters. This is the name of the track.
Oh, I'm fine. Okay.
Sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Again, okay. Is the instantly ominous. It's
yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so,
like Dracula or something's just entered the room. Like
totally. Like everything else gets sucked out. It's and this.
Yeah.
That's the Secrets theme, and it's associated with Crimson Dawn and Dryden, and yeah, it enters here. It sounds super ominous. It's like in a lower octave, so it's more like that. It's honestly like it really reminds me of an opera here.
Yeah, I mean it's diddle-diddle-diddle, almost feels like it's about to follow it. Like it's yeah it's right there.
Totally. Okay, let's continue.
We've been introduced.
Yeah, this is Han Solo and Chewbacca. They're with me.
I'm Dryden Vos. I see you've already
just the mood gets slower.
Top lieutenant.
Han and I grew up together on Corellia.
And you can hear more whispers in the background.
Well, I admire anyone who can crawl their way out of a sewer. Especially a sewer as putrid as Corellia.
This is a close-up of Dryden's hand caressing Kira's shoulder.
Well, it's good to have you. Welcome. And you too, Chewbacca. Welcome. All right. Let's eat a little, drink a lot.
This line.
Private.
We're just friends, all right?
Okay, that little bit at the end was a little bit of the Han Solo heroic theme.
I think we get a little bit later on of it as well. But it's Han sort of, it's him BSing his way through, as he does through the whole film, where he's like, he's trying to like be like, no, it's fine, we've got this, I've got this, I've got it all covered, you don't need to worry. And yeah, because Chewie's obviously saying, come on dude, what are you doing, like why yeah.
Well, that's when he's like, we're just friends.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, exactly. Han,
yeah, definitely friends. That was a friends conversation that you were just having over there by the window. Absolutely. I was watching. Yeah.
So one thing about, like, I find it so, I find the creepiest moments sometimes are when the music is so obviously ominous, but the words, the dialogue sounds like it's positive. And so here, when we're getting like Dryden's like scary, like ominous, low theme, he's like, all right, like, all right, let's eat a little, drink a lot, and talk privately. Like, it just, you know, he's like, let's drink and eat, like, welcome. Like, he's saying, like, welcome, like, but it sounds like just scary.
And the fact that we've just seen what he does in private rooms, like, just before this as well, like, we know as an audience, like, this dude is not good news. And even if you didn't get that from the visuals of him stabbing an Imperial officer or a governor or something, like, you get it just from the music alone. Like, he's bad news.
Yes. And he's like in control of the situation. Like, the fact that the music changes immediately to obey him when he enters. And then he controls the music for the rest of the time. Whereas if like Han were winning in this situation, we would probably hear Han's heroic themes. Like, yeah. Han kicking
and
ass.
And you mentioned the hearing the whispers and stuff. They have a completely different sort of feeling for me when Dryden's music is playing, because when we're hearing the karaoke track, it's just, you know, it's background chatter. It's everyone in a bar, and it feels more cantinery. And even if the levels of those haven't been changed, when they're there with Dryden's theme, it's, oh no, it's the boss, it's the boss, it's the boss. Like, yeah. It's spooky. It's like a, it's like, he doesn't, but it's like the room parts for him, like the crowd parts, because Dryden has entered the scene.
That's exactly how I feel it too, where the parting of the seas, yeah, for Dryden. It really, like, the sound definitely is doing that. Like, he just commands like every element of,
if I couldn't see the scene but I was only listening to it, that is exact. I would have expected a busier sort of floor, and then everyone moving to let him through to where our heroes are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's a powerful way to like score for or emphasize like a villain or like a very important character or something. It reminds me like of Vader, the way that Vader is treated.
Always. Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of like other important but sort of ominous characters are introduced in Star Wars or in other films where like they could speak with the most quiet voice, but the room will still listen to them. Even if it's the loudest room, it's just everything stops because that person suddenly commands all the attention. And yeah.
The one that comes to mind is when the Emperor arrives on the Death Star in Return of the Jedi, just as they're walking through, and it's just that walk and talk, and it's like all this fanfare. And for him, again, it means nothing. Like, he's not paying attention to anyone else on that deck apart from talking to Vader. Yeah. I mean, he's a little bit louder, a little bit more over the top, but he's still very much having a one-to-one conversation.
Yeah. So now as we continue, we're entering the private chambers.
You're touchy.
Beckett, you have put me in a terrible position.
I know, Dryden, and I am sorry.
You're sorry?
Dryden, there were complications. There were factors.
Impus Nest has been a constant irritation.
So very lightly in the background.
It's one you should have anticipated. It's one you should have dealt with.
Trust me, I know I made a mistake, but when you hired me, you told me no one else had this.
Trust me!
Oh, I think I just heard a Dies Irae. I never even noticed that before. I'm on the hunt. Okay, wait.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I can hear something in that moment, but yeah.
Okay. Okay. I think I heard. Okay. So what we're hearing here is low strings, like basses and celli. And we hear, I believe it's like woodwinds, oh, probably oboe, maybe clarinet on top. And in the middle, there's just space. There's not really much happening in the middle ranges of the instruments. So we have, okay. I'm just gonna play it again.
You told me no one else had this.
Trust me.
I definitely heard it.
Trust me.
Yeah.
I definitely heard it.
After hearing you play it, I will never not hear that now.
Okay, I'm gonna have to ask. I'm keeping track of Alex Ludwig. Dr. Alex Ludwig is the DSERA guru.
Oh wow! Okay.
I'll have to ask him on to come on later this season. But he catalogs DSERA references in film, and I don't think he's told me yet what his solo ones are. But I'm just going to run these by him because DSERA references are sometimes it's hard to tell. Like, you know, it's like Hidden Mickey's.
Is that just a musical? Is it just a musical reference to a particular thing? I'm missing it completely.
No, it's totally fine. DSERA is like not just a Star Wars motif, but it actually stems from a Gregorian chant centuries ago. Oh, okay. And it is commonly referenced in classical music, in film music. It's like such a it's a film music trope now, and it's in Star Wars a lot, and it comes up constantly, and sometimes it's really, really obvious, like in The Shining or in A New Hope with the Burning Homestead or something.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting to hear it because composers do it on purpose all the time. Also, my favorite example is Nightmare Before Christmas, if you are familiar with that. Mm-hmm. Making Christmas, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. Danny Elfman does it a ton on purpose. So that's how you remember it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's very, very cool. I'll be keeping an ear out for it, definitely.
Oh, wait, since I have it on hand, I'll just play DSERA. Oh, never mind. I'm getting Spinning Wheel of Death. Okay. So I guess I'm not playing it.
That's okay. Basically, if you're listening to this, you've heard it somewhere.
Yes. Especially if you listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
Everyone's probably like, no, don't do it again. No, I'm just kidding. It's one of those things. If sometimes it's easy to forget, if you're not a musician, I take it for granted sometimes what is easy to remember and what is not, you know. Okay. So Dryden is obviously like, he is starting to have a physical reaction at this point too. And the way that his face
lights up.
Yes. That's a way to put it.
It is really interesting. I only notice it now and then when I watch this film. I don't notice it all the time. But yeah, the lines down his face sort of getting more pronounced when he gets angry is really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the novelization explains it a little bit, but it doesn't like really explain it. It's just that it happens to him when he's getting emotional and Kira can notice it. And it's something that happens like his, I don't know if it's a species thing or whatnot, but it's not really important. But the thing is like, you can really see the manifestation of like his rage and all of his like emotions show up on his face with like these red, I don't know, like striations or something.
Yeah. It feels to me like, cause that character was originally, he was a recast, wasn't he? I believe.
I think so.
And it was meant to be like an alien species, I think, if I remember rightly.
Oh, okay.
Like, I think I remember hearing that it was going to be like almost like a big cat thing. Something similar to that, which is interesting because it sort of reminds me of one of the old Star Wars Han Solo novels. The A.C. Crispin one, there was a big sort of cat type alien in that. And I was like, I was wondering if the original design was meant to invoke that sort of similarity. But then when they recast it and they sort of went, I feel like it was almost quite last minute. They were like, okay, let's not just have it be a human. Let's have something a bit different. This is something that we can do like relatively, well, I'm not going to say cheap, but like relatively easy compared to doing a complete CG character or something like that.
Yeah. that's interesting. Okay, so...
One you should have dealt with. Trust me, I know I made a mistake, but when you hired me, you told me no one else had this.
Trust me! Test me one more time, you see what happens.
It's right before he says test me.
What Dryden is trying to say is that we're not interested in why you don't have it.
No, I'm not interested.
It's Kira.
I'm not interested at all.
Dryden, what can I do to make this right?
Make this right? There is no making this right. You know who I answer to, and you know what he'll...
Who does he answer to?
He'll say there have to be consequences. So here's what I...
Are you asking me who he answers?
Yeah.
Asked? Yeah, it's...
What do you think?
Mold. Mold.
Do you think they know that? Or does Beckett...
I don't know if Beckett does. I mean, we know that Kira does. We assume that she knows who he answers to because she sort of makes the call later on. But I don't know if Beckett does. It seems weird if he does.
I think I have trouble seeing Maul as a... I don't want to say threat, because for sure he's definitely threatening, for sure. Mm. And for sure, when he shows up at the end of the movie, I'm like, oh my gosh. Mm. But maybe it's because of the Clone Wars series, mm-hmm. which I like. Mm-hmm. But Maul is like a campy character to me.
Definitely. And I mean, especially when you move into Rebels and he's like... playing it very over the top kind of thing. And it's great. Yeah.
But I think, I always think of like, who the people who we perceive as threats in Star Wars are answering to and what they mean by that. If they are talking about their direct superior or higher in the pipeline, because there's always someone, there's always a bigger fish. There's always, you know.
Yeah.
And so I wonder how far ahead or how up the chain, Dryden is thinking here. Like, I guess it makes sense that he's thinking directly of Maul, but part of me is also like, is he thinking of Maul? Is he thinking of the person that Maul's answering to and the person that that person is answering to? Like, what if it all just goes straight back to the Emperor?
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah. The only reason that now, and it is sort of a retcon not in a bad way, but it's, you know, retroactive continuity. The final season of Clone Wars came out after this, and we have the Dryden hologram early on in that season when Maul is tunnels on Mandalore. And I mean, a lot of people speculate that they did a whole animation for Dryden Vos, so they expect him to pop up in Bad Batch at some point, which I'd love to see.
I need to rewatch Clone Wars.
That final season's amazing. It's worth a rewatch.
Yeah, I agree.
That's the only reason that I think he might be talking about Maul, but he could be talking about one of the Mandalorians who are working for Maul who feel like closer lieutenants. So maybe Dryden generally answers to that person who then answers to Maul up the chain. But it is interesting, as you say, like Maul doesn't feel like a threatening gangster character, whereas Dryden has that sort of Godfather-esque level of threat about him. When you're in his presence here, the test me, that line delivery, it's the staying calm, and then bang, right there. And the music does such a great job of sort of emphasizing that hit of, like, don't test me.
Yes, and I think... In the one thing that this film doesn't have that other film that other Star Wars films do have is Force people, and so we don't think of Maul as the type. Like to me, I think to both of us, Dryden seems way scarier. Like, or at least like more intimidating in this crime boss sort of way. Maul has the. For, you know, he has his significant abilities in that type of thing. But in terms of crime syndicate stuff, I don't like what I'm trying to say is like, do they fear him in the way that people feared Vader with like we just don't, like, it's a force person. Like, crap. Like,
we don't understand it, so therefore we're scared of it. Yeah.
Or not even that, but, like, that might even be the way that Maul is able to intimidate people with his, you know, with his force stuff. Like, that, I'm sure that's a big intimidating factor. Whereas in a story, if it's a story that is, like, Jedi-centric or something, Maul, maybe it doesn't, is more on even playing field in terms of everyone's forcey. So
I think the timeline has a big factor in that. Like, in the Clone Wars, there are other force users that are Jedi, there are Sith. So there are more people. It's not as out of place. So he doesn't feel as much of a threat. And then in Rebels, we only see him interacting with the Ghost Crew, who, you know, when you've got Kanan and Ezra there, they're forcey. So they're, and the Inquisitors. So again, all force users, so doesn't feel like that intimidating presence, but around
non-force users.
Non-force users, just gangsters, smugglers, and that sort of people, then yeah, to be able to do the stuff that he does.
Yeah. Scary.
Yeah.
In a and different I feel way. Like yeah.
That the it is just a way of putting a lightsaber in the film, but the fact that he uses the force to grab his lightsaber when he's talking to Kira, it is almost a show of power. It's that,
yeah,
I can do things. I can do things that you can't do.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it does check out, like, amongst all of the Star Wars films. It's like when we are in bounty hunter space, or like amongst, you know, company that's not Jedi centric. Basically, it's like anytime you're like, oh, he's a Jedi, like, that no one wants to, like, mess with the Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I mean, there are people who are genuinely scared of them because they're not around all that much.
Yeah.
That's played up very well in some of the books recently.
For sure. Do you have any specific books in mind that you're thinking of?
The final middle grade book from the last wave of the High Republic. It's not
Midnight Horizon.
No, that was the YA one. The younger.
Oh,
one.
Yep. I know what you're talking about. Yep. I read it too. Race to Crash Point Tyler. The one after that.
The one after that.
I know exactly what you're talking about. The Justina Ireland book. Yeah.
Yes. It's fantastic.
I liked it.
I'm blank on the name. Yeah, it's really good. It's my favorite.
Yeah, that's right. Because they're
middle grade ones.
Because they're trying to get, yeah, that's right. Avon's trying to get out with the two, mm-hmm. with the two other kids. And they're like, and she's like, I know a Jedi. And they're like,
are they any good? Because on that planet. Yeah. The Jedi, there's some history that we might get in a later book. Probably will. the Jedi have been there, and things didn't go well. We don't know what happened, what transpired, but the people of that planet don't have the high regard for the Jedi that we generally see elsewhere.
And similarly, post Clone Wars, people like the Clone Wars and Jedi, like, may not have helped every world or ended in a favorable way. So
I mean, just the line in The Phantom Menace, like, we're not here to free slaves. It's like,
yeah, that's so true.
Like, what a terrible thing to say. Right. And also, like, surely if you're meant to be these guardians of peace and justice in the galaxy, freeing slaves should be kind of high up on your priority list, you'd like to think. But who knows?
You're thinking of Mission to Disaster, by the way.
That was the name of it. Mission to Disaster. Great book.
So here, Dryden is saying, you know who I answer to, and clearly it's someone that Beckett is also intimidated by. And Kira is trying to smooth over the situation, as we will hear.
This is what I need you to do for me. I need you to give me a reason not to kill you.
Because I will make it up to
you. No. How? How will you make it up to me?
By delivering exactly what was promised.
Beckett does not know what he's getting himself into.
100 kg.
He's digging deeper.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's, and the music, like, the way that.
Yes. And the way that he's like, we will simply steal it from somewhere else. The word simply just gets me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, dude, you don't have, like, control of this situation at all.
It's like when your parents bust you and they're like, how are you going to, I will simply just fix it.
I'll pay you back.
I will the money simply that I give ask surgeons just.
there's no simple way out of this with what you're proposing.
Yeah.
But again, it's calmed down for Dryden. Like Dryden, he knows he's in control. He knows that he's squashed down Beckett at this point, because like Beckett was feeling okay about himself. He felt like he had some level of control. Dryden has squashed that down to sort of re-emphasize the fact that it's no. This is me. And now, yeah, he's all calm. So his bit of the score is perfectly chill.
Yeah, that's true.
But with an intimidation factor still there.
Yeah, we still have that rumbly bass. We still have that bass. Yeah. Just the upper part has maybe calmed down a little bit. It's less active. Yeah. Okay, let's continue listening. We will simply steal it from somewhere else. And
from where?
You'll be hard pushed to find that anywhere outside an Imperial vault. Scarif, maybe Mercy Island.
That's impossible.
So let's come up with some other options, other ideas that we might.
What about unrefined?
See, it's that musical thing again, where it's like we're in a musical, because like right as he says the line, the music kind of stalls.
Yeah.
What about unrefined? And then you're like, the music tells you, oh, that's actually a really interesting, that's supposed to be an interesting line. Let's pay attention to that line. It paves the way.
I was going to say, it starts to set up. I don't think it's on that line. It's a little bit later, but when we get sort of a hint of Han's theme, when he's sort of backs himself into a plan that he didn't really have going into this conversation, he's riffing. It's having a conversation. It's ad lib. It's yes anding what is ever being said. He's completely yes anding. So Kira's talking about other places and how difficult those other places, and he's going, yeah, but that's refined stuff. We don't need the refined. Like, we can go for the raw. Like,
simply.
Yeah. So it's, easy. Nothing. There's nothing to it. But he doesn't know anything about it. He doesn't know where it is, how difficult it is to transport, any of the complications that we know from later on in the movie, or from even later on in the conversation. But he's going to set up a scene and then yes and based on whatever is said back to him. He's going to let them come up with the plan, basically, but then almost feel like he's taking credit for it.
It's like the quote, like, jump and the net will appear or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He constantly
which is
does
very
that.
Han Solo, which is why it's exactly what he would do.
Absolutely. So, okay, let's listen to that part again. And okay, this time listen for we have like rumbly bass, but then just as you said, like we do start to hear like an incipient setup of something else to come later. I'm hearing a little bit of like, or like even something like that, where there is a little bit of a faster, I think it's in the celli. And then also listen for there's a little bit when Kira's talking, we do hear some of the string. We do hear some legato, like smooth string stuff, very, very lightly as well. So I feel like there's these different aspects. There's these different, sort of characters almost woven into the orchestration of this cue. And then the funniest part is when Han says the line about, what about unrefined? That's when the music basically flatlines for a second, because we're like, oh, what did he just say?
Yeah. Is this gonna sink the ship, or is it keep it afloat? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Refined coaxium.
Yes, we will simply steal it from somewhere else.
From where?
You'll be hard pushed to find that anywhere outside an Imperial vault.
It's very
Scarif, maybe Mercy Island.
That's impossible.
So let's come up with some other options, other ideas that we might.
What about unrefined?
Well, the only known source of astatic coaxium is a fissure vent beneath the spice mines on Kessel.
Yeah. That's the one.
It served as a transition point.
Very, very good one.
See the Pikes control Kessel. Crimson.
There's Han's theme again.
Yeah.
That's it's a good transition. It's it really continues to feel like an opera, like a musical.
100%. It's being scored to the dialogue, not to the scene as much. It's great. But it's the fact that Han's theme doesn't kick in until after that moment of pause, as you say. Like, he's throwing this one out there, And then again, if I'm listening to this without ever seeing it, I'm thinking that it's quick cutting to between everyone else in the room as everyone's like either looking at him or looking back at Kira and going, would that be an option? Would that work? And then she's like, well, here's a complication for that. But then it sort of swells back in.
Yeah. And something about when his theme comes in is, even though, okay, so there are the three main Han themes, young Han themes, and this one is the heroic variant or heroic version. And we hear it sometimes, I mean, when it's truly sounding heroic, it's fast, it's bright. And here it is the same melody, but it is slow. It is not, you know, which you'll hear, you know, in the pod, in this podcast intro outro, because that's,
yep,
that's how the intro outro for this Star Wars Music Minute is this season. And you'll hear it fast. But here it's the more, it sounds almost more searching, even though it's not technically the searching theme. It's, you know, it's slow. It's sounding a little bit more under the radar.
I think under the radar, definitely. Like I hadn't noticed it in previous times watching through, but here when I was listening to the music and listening like for musical things, it's obviously there when you know that it's there, but it's under the radar, definitely.
You almost have to be like primed to listen for it, because I think when themes are slower, or I think when music unfolds much slower than we're accustomed to it, it just takes more attention to notice it, because I don't know if that makes sense, because it's harder to notice a pattern when it's more spread apart. And it's what like our themes reading,
it's like
not
reading
patterns.
A foreign language. I feel like it's like reading a language where you have to know the entire sentence to be able to get the context of it, sort of thing. Whereas for us, if we're reading our native language, like I can be reading along and picking it up as I go, each word. Whereas with, like, if I'm, say, reading Spanish, like I have to read the whole sentence to be able to go, okay, and I sort of almost loop back around. And I feel like that's the same when, yeah, as you said, if one of these themes is being played slower.
Yeah, because it unfolds.
Pick up on it later.
Because the reveal of each subsequent note is slower, so we don't get that like payoff, that like instant recognition of like, oh, it's this note and then this note and then this note, which, you know, a melodic theme or a melody is, or a melodic theme in particular is a pattern of notes. It's a pattern. And so to pick up on the pattern, we have to, I mean, if we can't even pick up on the pattern because it's unfolding so slowly, then, so it's easy. I think it's easy to miss. And I think, also when Ralph, your co-host on Live Action Star Wars, came on in episode 6 to talk about, you know, the Valacord campfire scene and stuff, we did spot an incipient little Enfys Nest, theme too, which he hadn't noticed before. And it's so soft and it's like slow and like light. So I think it's a similar thing.
Definitely.
Yeah. So we are almost nearing the end of the minute. So
the source of astatic coaxium is a fissure vent beneath the spice mines on Kessel.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. That's a very, very good one.
See, the Pikes control Kessel.
There's the theme, slow.
Crimson Dawn maintains a fragile alliance with the Pikes. It's one that I can't jeopardize without risking an all-out war with the syndicates, and that, gentlemen, I will not do.
It's interesting. It almost feels like if they were to do a Crimson Dawn series or anything more, that any of the music being played just there, like after Han's theme, it would make sense if you start sort of use that again and building out your sort of Crimson Dawn themes based on that, I would think. Just because of, again, the way it's all worked, like an opera where it's all just straight to the dialogue. It's like, okay, cool. Here's a Han plan. Now he's talking about Crimson Dawn and the syndicates and all of that. It's, yeah.
Yeah. All these little, like this one is interesting because all the themes that we do get are so subtle. Yeah. Do you have any Any other thoughts about the music or sound in this set of minutes?
I as I said at the start, I've really enjoyed it because it's, while it's not high action, like minutes or anything, it's, there's still such a roller coaster there. You've got the broad romance into the diegeticness of just some of the great stuff that it's not quite the chicken in the pot level of focus on it, but it's still very much there. I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad that I got a little bit of Hans' theme at the end there, because I love that. It's such a great bit of music.
Yeah.
And that was the one that John Williams came into the right for that theme, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I felt like, I don't know, you can hear it. I love this score altogether, but that piece of music feels like sort of true Star Wars. It's John Williams doing a Star Wars theme, so it's going to be... You know, it's unmistakable, I feel.
Yeah, I think the whole like Adventures of Han track that he did, which, you know, the suite that he gifted us with, it feels very on, it's very on brand. It's very, yeah.
It makes me excited to know what he's done for Kenobi.
Gosh, I'm so excited that even thinking about it just overwhelms me with feelings.
it's almost like it's the one that got away. It's the one character that he never got to do this for. One of the major characters anyway. So to be able to do it now, it is almost like this sort of gift that if this is his last thing that he does with Star Wars. I don't want to think about it, but If that is him sort of hanging it up and just going, that's me done. I've completed Star Wars, thanks. Then it's a great way to go out.
Yeah, but I agree.
Let's hope not. Let's hope that John Williams keeps making Star Wars music forever.
Forever, yeah.
Ever. Forever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Agreed. Okay, rundown of the themes from this set of minutes. That we had Han and Kira. We had the secrets theme. We had, I'm going to say a possible Dies Irae. And we have young Han Solo, the heroic version composed by John Williams. And if you're following along in the soundtrack, we are actually spanning three different tracks on the deluxe version. That is Han and Kira Reunite, Stormtrooper JP054 Karaoke, and Dryden's Patience is Tested.
Very good.
Yes. And
I still need to pick it up. The Mondo vinyl of that.
Oh, you're a vinyl collector. Soundtrack. Yeah.
I do only for soundtracks and scores and things, not so much. I've been getting the nice Star Wars reprints that they've been doing. And the Mondo ones, again, it's the only reason that I haven't got it yet is the shipping from the US to the UK. Just, it doubles the price pretty much.
Oh, wow.
And then I'll get about half the time I get stung with import like fees when it's already basically in the country as well. So it just, it makes it something that I really have to go, yeah, I'm going to splash out and be willing to spend $75 on one record, basically.
Right. Just, I don't have it. I don't have a record player, so I'm not really in that world, but I know that Ralph obviously very much is. And so
very much. That's pretty much all Ralph does.
Yeah. So before we end, I have to ask you the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire.
Yeah, I made some notes. I made some notes because I knew that I'd forget by the time we were done. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Let's do it. Okay. Question number one. In exactly three words, what does Star Wars sound like?
Triumph, thrill, and happiness.
Nice. Question number two. Yeah. Do you want to explain that?
I mean, just the triumph and the thrill is very much like in the watching of the films. They even the sort of the deeper, sadder tracks and stuff, it always just has a level of sort of triumphantness to it. But again, I think that's a John Williams thing. You can go into anything. You can go into Jurassic Park, you can go to any of his films and have that sort of feel, like Jaws, even like the Jaws theme has sort of triumphant. That feel to it. I mean, yeah, he's gonna do it. No. Happiness is me. Happiness is the personal. It's my happy place. No matter what is going on, it can be the worst times of my life. I can whack on a Star Wars soundtrack. I can put on a Star Wars movie. If I'm feeling really, really bad, I will put on a Star Wars to feel just momentarily moments of happiness, even if it's just for a couple of hours at a time. Like, luckily I haven't needed to do that in quite a while, but like there's been bad times in the past where I've just gone, I don't want to do anything right now. I'm just gonna put on any Star Wars movie and I know that I'll at least be happy with that.
I like that. Question number two: what's something related to Star Wars music or sound that you're curious and want to learn more about?
I was trying to pull up a list, but it's the genres of music that are described in the Alphabet Squadron books.
Oh.
I know you're a book reader like me, so I don't know if you've read Alexander Freed's Alphabet Squadron. But there's a character in there, it's Chasna Chadwick. She's the B-wing pilot of the squad, and she sort of has pirated and ripped loads of different music, and throughout the three books Alex Freed will name drop them, and I couldn't for the life of me pull them up. I wish I could, but a lot of the time it'll be like something punk or like this like dance music from blah blah blah, but it's they've all got sort of Star Wars-y names, and I would love to hear some tracks,
like to hear what they sound like.
I want to hear what they sound like. I'm dying for a High Republic soundtrack, an official like score for the High Republic, in the same way that they did for Shadows of the Empire back in 96.
I still have to listen to that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's Star Wars. But I don't know. It feels sort of slightly less than to me. But I know that there are a lot of people that have got strong fondness for it, but I would love something for, it's funny, I want a score for the High Republic, but for
the diegetic stuff,
Alphabet, yeah. I want diegetic music for, no, I'd like a score for the High Republic, like but for the Alphabet Squadron books in particular, and even if it's just for that character, just a soundtrack, like just give me a CD's worth, just give me like 12, 13 tracks of all different genres that are described or at least name dropped. I don't think they're described particularly well. The other pilots in the squad don't really like a lot of the music that she plays because she plays it out on like a
so she wide needs to drop band. A mixtape.
Yeah, absolutely. I want it.
That's cool.
And then in the final book, it's you find out that I think it's all the chapters or at least all the sections of the book are named after... it's music from dead worlds. So it's planets that have been either destroyed or ravaged and the civilizations don't exist anymore. And it's all types of music from those worlds. And when you get to that, it's like, it hits so hard. And it's like, ooh, that's not fun. It's really interesting. But yeah, you hear about like, there's an old Iranian sort of pop track and things like that. And it's just like, ooh. These aren't happy places.
That's an answer that I haven't gotten even remotely yet. So,
I want it. Chasna Chadwick playlist.
That's awesome. And last question is: what is a score or soundtrack that you're fond of besides anything Star Wars?
This was a hard one to nail down to just one. So Ralph very much has the film score side of our podcast down. Like he listens to film scores pretty much exclusively. It's weird. I come from a very musical family, despite the fact that none of us play instruments. We were all, my dad was a DJ his entire life. My brother did it for 30 plus years. My sister dabbled here and there, and I did it professionally for 10 years. So music has always been around. So when I hear a soundtrack, that's sort of my thing. And if I know a film's coming out, there's been times where I've made my own soundtracks and stuff. I would love to do sort of the music supervisor role of trying to put that stuff together. I'd love to do something like that. So for me, I've got scores that I'll listen to, but they're always sort of more on the sort of pop side of things. So it's your Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross Social Network score.
It's one of my favorites.
I love it. That's one that I will listen to. How to Train Your Dragon was Howard Shore, was this, that. I love this. I love that soundtrack. I know that's come up probably quite a bit on these episodes. Drive is another one. But again, that's more of a soundtrack. There's a score as well. And I think the tracks that are, it's Cliff Martinez, I believe, who did Drive. They're great. They're just as good as the soundtrack of that film. But also, if we're just going to nail it down to one soundtrack, the film Dope, it came out, I want to say 2015. I think it was sort of an indie film, smaller film. Really good sort of 90s hip hop play.
Cool. Soundtrack.
Really, really cool stuff.
Okay.
But I mean, there's also Dazed and Confused, Good Morning Vietnam, and
oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. Great stuff.
I can't nail it down. I'll try.
Give me three.
Let's go Dope.
Mm-hmm.
Social Network.
And that's a soundtrack.
Yeah. Dope soundtrack. Drive. Let's go. No, Social Network, because that is a score. And Dazed and Confused soundtrack.
Cool. That's cool. Yeah, the designation of score versus soundtrack gets a little bit confusing. So you were talking before when you said that Ralph holds down the fort on the scores, but you are more of a soundtrack person. You specifically mean the types of soundtrack albums that have like music placements on them. Like,
yes,
for example, Pulp Fiction. And things that are, you know, you might think of more of as a mixtape, perhaps.
Kind of, yeah, mixtape, a playlist, sort of that type of, yeah.
And for me, when, to me, a score is, or like even what we have here, John Powell's solo soundtrack score, like I would call it a soundtrack album. But like other, it's confusing naming. Like people, there's no like one set way. It's, because when I think of score in the context of like my life and what's relevant to me, I think of like, oh, like if someone says they have this, like if someone told me I have the score to Solo: A Star Wars Story, I would think, oh my gosh, you have the score that they read off of.
I see.
And then I think of the albums that are released as the soundtrack album.
Okay.
But of course there is like different, there are different types of albums for different types of music. You know, music is handled differently in different films. So sometimes a soundtrack that has selections from the score, and sometimes it's a soundtrack album that has placed music.
I think Drive was the mix of both. It's got.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Okay. Mm. And Dazed and Confused is placed
very
music.
Much a mixtape.
Yeah.
Very much.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, where can people find you and your stuff online?
You can find me at liveactionstarwars.com. The YouTube channel, I believe, and all the socials is liveactionsw. That's where you can find us every week talking about everything Star Wars in live action. Not just films and TV, that's toy commercials, PSAs from the 70s and 80s, appearances on The Muppet Show. You can find everything.
That's a fun framing.
Yeah. And I've also started writing things again more recently. And I love Star Wars, so I'm always going to write longer form things about Star Wars. And that is at tinyletter.com/James Hewlett.
Nice. Like fan fiction or like...
No. More analyses. Sort of review stuff. Reviews. Yeah, analyses, write-ups, reviews, things of that sort.
Awesome.
It's not all Star Wars. There'll be other book reviews, film reviews. Some personal pieces, quite bloggish.
Cool.
I used to write every day and I sort of dropped off, but I'm trying to get back into it and doing longer form things. So I did a whole write-up of the phase one of The High Republic.
Oh, nice.
Most recently. So nice. If you're interested in High Republic write up, that's where you can find that.
Oh, nice. I will definitely check that out.
Awesome.
And listeners, you can find Star Wars Music Minute wherever you get podcasts or on YouTube. And when shows come out, I also get together with my friends James Waterman and Justin Scheid, and we do commentary live streams on the TV series. However, I'm not 100% sure if we're going to do Kenobi.
We've already offered Xanthi a spot to come and guest on live action. So if she doesn't want to do it completely on her own or on your own show, you can just come on maybe for an episode.
And otherwise, I will see you next week. May the force be with you. All the links will be in the show notes to things that we discussed and to other links, places you can find James and you can find me and Star Wars Music Minute. So yeah, may the force be with you. Talk to you next week on Star Wars Music Minute.